This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Come get some. See where I live. IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me today, Justin Davis,
yep.
Greg Miller,
hey,
the ghost of Brian Altano,
ooh, bro,
sitting in the chair over there.
Like meatball.
He may be resurrected shortly to join us here.
Cryptic.
Yeah, so much to talk about this week. GTA 5 is now out on our new gym platforms.
In first person.
We've got a couple 10-year anniversaries to celebrate.
A first person?
But first, yeah. The first person mode was just introduced into video games 10 years ago. First, Far Cry 4 is awesome.
Yep.
That's our big story.
Amazing game.
This week. So good.
The top story, Far Cry 4, is just the bee's knees.
The bee's knees. The best thing to happen since sliced bread.
The business.
Yeah. Ooh, the business. Give him the business.
Yeah, I've played a lot of it. Greg, I knew you played a heck of a lot of it.
Yeah.
And Justin's played a bit of it.
Yeah, so I started to play Far Cry 4, but I'm obsessed with Dragon Age Inquisition.
Gotcha.
And the games are so different that, you know, Dragon Age, I love it, but I'm having a conversation with the guy, and he says, I dream of dreams of ancient ruins, and then I switch to try to play Far Cry, and there's people shouting,
things shooting in and grabbing
and
you,
the air, and so I did like the first three missions in Far Cry, and I'm like, I can't.
This is too extreme.
It's too much, and like even the movement, like you move really fast in this game and shoot really fast, and so I'm 100% gonna play it, but I gotta wait till I'm through Dragon Age.
We were just talking, it feels very similar to Far Cry 3.
Yeah.
If you liked Far Cry 3, I'm sure you're gonna like Far Cry 4.
Just punch that wolf.
Yeah.
Knocked him the F out.
Is all of this footage from you and Brian playing?
No. This is a mixture of me and Alfredo, Brian and I, and then Tim and Alfredo. There's a whole bunch of mashups here.
It almost feels like Far Cry 3 Part 2.
Yeah, totally.
It definitely does feel like Far Cry 3 2, which that's not necessarily a good nor bad. It's not a value judgment, but this is not like a crazy
episode. They didn't reinvent the wheel here. No. Like I was telling you guys, the first time we sat down to do our Let's Plays, they gave me the controller and I jumped in. It was like, oh, okay. I immediately went to stealth. I immediately started taking guys out, clearing the base, doing everything.
But pull up the binoculars and mark everybody up.
The co-op's the new feature for it, being able to jump in, play with other people, run around and do that. That is fun. I mean, part of Far Cry Ride is the fact that it's that sandbox world, right? Your experiences are, you know, your own, and the fact that, like, this starts with that, you know, we stumble on a tiger cave, and then we see it, and I'm like, how are we going to do it? And I throw a grenade just as it runs out, and then it explodes, and the tiger shoots at us like a 3D movie and tumbles past us, and it's like, well, that's amazing.
One of the big new things is, I mean, it's always been an open world. That's always been Far Cry's thing, but now you have the little, I don't know what they call it, the little personal helicopter.
Oh, the gyrocopter.
The gyrocopter.
Difficult to pilot.
Yeah, but it's the fun one. And when you're playing with other people, they can attach to the bottom of the grappling hook and then get pulled around.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. But that plus the wingsuit and that, like, it's turning you loose to a little bit greater degree than 3 right. did to, like, you're running amok in this sandbox compared to, like, it kind of ruling you is how I felt about 3, kind of.
Yeah, you're the commander here, I think. You feel like you're empowered at any second to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super excited to play more. I thought Dragon Age would be my winter break game, but now I think this will be my winter break game.
This is going to be my Thanksgiving break game.
Ooh, that's right. We get a Thanksgiving break coming
up.
That's
just but I got a baby.
Yeah, that was a bad move. I warned you.
Because everything is terrible now.
Love her to death, but there's certain times where I'm like, yes, Dragon Age all day.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Nope, never again.
Oh, wait, that thing keeps pooping. I got to take care of that.
She's got a tooth now.
What? Do you
what?
Think? Yeah, she's got a tooth.
Wow.
Yeah,
first tooth.
What do you think of Troy Baker's performance?
I like what I had seen of it. The opening is really, really well done with him. For context on my Far Cry experience, I've probably played 4 hours of it all in Let's Plays and not story-based. So that's me fooling around doing other things with people. So what the main knock I hear is there's not enough of them.
Yeah, that's kind of like you have the same experience when you do play the story because he shows up in the beginning and then he's just gone for hours and hours and hours. Sometimes he'll check in on the radio once, like every hour or two, but yeah.
Okay.
I wonder why.
Mm. He's expensive. He's Troy Baker. You see the fancy socks that guy wears? Holy cow,
he said
trust
everything.
Me.
Yeah. I don't think he's that expensive.
He's reasonable.
Yeah.
You hear about they built in some, piracy
alert? The piracy thing? That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it when developers do stuff like this.
Sure, although it is, so I want to clarify that in this instance, so people were complaining on the internet and saying, this game doesn't have a field of view slider on PC, which is a setting that they expect to be in every PC game, and they were complaining on Reddit and other places. Yeah. But it turns out that field of view slider comes in a day one patch that you don't get if you pirate the game. So it wasn't something that Ubisoft put in specifically to catch pirates.
Got it.
But they were catching themselves.
But it was a way to do it.
But there has been games like Alan Wake was a game that if it detected that you were pirating it, Alan just wore an eye patch the whole game. And there's been other things. One of the Serious Sam games, the first weapon you picked up, it spawned a crazy fast invincible scorpion that would just hunt you down and kill you if it detected that you pirated the game. Yeah. So this is a little bit different than that. But yeah, it's awesome.
So what is a field of view slider? For those of us that don't do a lot of PC gaming, what is it even doing?
It shows you like the angle that you can view, like how much of...
your peripheral.
Yeah, like how much of your peripheral you can
see. So if you have one of those curved monitors, you want a lot of it.
Really?
Even if you don't
and if you have a 4x3, you want it right there.
Even if it's not a curved monitor.
I didn't update my drivers before I bothered dealing with it.
Well, so what happened is... these people pirated the game, and then this feature they're expecting wasn't in there, and they were complaining on the official forums.
Ugh.
Like, how crappy a person do you have to be to steal a game and then go complain about it?
Well, in that article, right, the Ubisoft number that they had thrown out, I think in 2012 or 2013, right, was like that 93% of PC games.
PC games,
yeah, are pirated for the big AAA games.
They did clarify that number because they had to walk it back. They're like, well, this is only in some countries and for certain things and for certain. But yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a big problem. It remains a problem on the PC platform.
Yeah.
I do think it's not as big as Ubisoft makes it. But yeah, to complain to want like tech support help with a game that you stole.
Sure.
The guy, so...
It takes balls.
It does. It takes something.
Luckily, the internet's got balls.
IGN wrote a news story about this piracy story, like pirates being caught. And we linked to a Reddit post where a guy was complaining about the field of view. And he's like, well, looks like IGN found this. And the guy on Reddit's like, let me explain. Ubisoft has had a lot of problems with their PC games, and they don't release PC demos, and so I really just downloaded this as a demo. It's like, nah, man. You got caught.
Yeah.
Just own it.
Give it up.
Anyway, Far Cry 4 is out. It's awesome. Really enjoying it. One of my third games of the year. But you will not stop singing the praise of Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yeah, Dragon Age Inquisition.
Which I've just barely started. I need to spend more time with.
My clear game of the year, hands down, actually. Although, to be fair, again, I haven't spent as much time with Far Cry as I want. It's incredibly impressive, and this is coming. I wasn't wild about Dragon Age Origins, and I skipped 2. Origins I found really boring. Inquisition is much, much, much better.
Yeah.
What makes it so it's not boring? Is it the story, the action, what's happening?
Sure. So it's the game is huge to start with, which huge is neither good nor bad. Like huge is just huge, but it's huge and polished, which is like this combination that you don't see very often.
Yeah.
So I've seen some people online complaining about some of the open world stuff where it's a little bit of a collectathon where it's like, go to this point in the map and do this, go to this point in the map and do that. But I feel like it's really thoughtful and polished in the way. Like, there's these shards you need to collect in the world. And a lesser game would just, like, drop them in the world and be like, find them. But in this game, it like ties into the lore, and then when you get enough, you can go to this secret like dungeons, and the more shards you've unlocked, it will open up a door and give you a bonus. And the way that you collect them is there's kind of little traversal puzzles to like figure out how to get to them. So they take everything and like take it to kind of the next level.
Interesting. Okay.
And I actually really, really like the story. I think it's interesting.
Greg, you're not usually a big fantasy guy.
Right.
Are you interested in Dragon Age? Are you going to check it out?
I'm interested because everybody talks about how much they like it. But like my girlfriend's playing it, and she's like super into BioWare games. And it took her like 11 tries to get the character just the way she wanted it to look. So like, she kept going in and quitting and coming back.
Yeah.
So I was watching some of it last night before bed, and I'm like, all right, I don't know if this speaks to stuff I'd want to do.
No, but I mean, I love it. It's my game of the year. But if you're not in elves and dwarves,
exactly,
and
you know, I'm not.
Person,
yeah, yeah.
Sure, I'm not going to try to say.
Like, but I mean, like, there's exceptions to that all the time. Like, I love Skyrim. I put a whole bunch of hours into Skyrim.
Yeah, if you like Skyrim, you should maybe give it a shot. Yeah.
In your heart of hearts, you pick that over Hearthstone. Your game of the year.
Baby. Did Hearthstone come out this year? Like in January, I
guess? It officially launched in March.
Two babies on their own train tracks. You can only save one.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I don't know. I can't make... I need to go, like, meditate and come back with an answer. Last thing I want to say about Dragon Age. I liked Skyrim a lot. I put, like, 200 hours into it. But kind of the problem with that game, or a lot of other sort of open-world big games, is there's not story justification for what you're doing.
Sure.
So you need to save the world, and shit's falling apart, and it's awful. But then someone's like, "Can you go get my? I left a lamb's
my rabbit escaped from its pen. Can you?"
And so you do that stuff. That's like the unspoken contract between like you and the game, is you do it because it's fun. You don't do it because it makes sense in the context of the game. And Dragon Age is so smart in how it solves this. You're the leader of this group, and so you need to spend power to unlock like story missions, and you earn that power and influence by completing side missions. And so it'll be like, get this horse lord on your side by doing these quests for him, and then he'll join you, and then that gives you, you know, 3 power, and then you spend that to advance the story. And so it's the first game that I've seen has like an actual intelligent way that like doing these side quests and clearing out an area and like making it better is spreading the influence of you're the leader of the Inquisition. And it's like, then you're getting people.
He started
on your
smiling
side.
Like you were thinking of something funny. Is he gone?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking anything funny. I was just enjoying his story. He's crafting a tale over here.
Yeah. So I think that's super clever, and it's one of the first games where like you go into an area and clear it out. Like in Far Cry, you're like, okay, I did the outpost, I collect this. But now there's more of a, like it's having a tangible benefit on the world, and
that's cool.
And you feel like the Inquisition getting stronger as you go.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, okay, that sounds interesting.
I know I'm trying to move on, but keep talking about Dragon Age. You brought up you mentioned the title screen, how it has a cool title screen.
Yeah.
But it was kind of ruined for me, because like I agree, it's a cool image, and then you hit the start button and whatever happens. But then like the first thing that happens is like accessing EA servers.
Oh, yeah.
That just kind of like killed the moment for me.
So they have this cool tool called the Dragon Age Keep, where it's because saves from Dragon Age 1 and 2 don't carry over.
Uh-huh.
And so their compromise was there's this web tool where you can choose like what happened in those games. I saved this character, I sided with the mages, and then it communicates with EA Origin to import that shit into Inquisition. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really skeptical of any single player game that has to communicate to the internet.
Yeah.
But at least Dragon Age has like a good reason for doing it. It's trying to pull
it
all
your
the
world.
Choices.
Yeah.
Okay, another game that's out this week, because every game is out this week. Grand Theft Auto V.
All the games.
What's
that?
That's that Stevie Wonder song.
From the trailer, the original trailer for Grand Theft Auto V.
I don't remember that at all.
If you heard it, you would remember.
It's a good jam. I mean, I know the song. Okay. I just don't remember.
That was from the trailer. Anyway.
Our first review.
Yeah, Dan Stapleton is still working on the review of the current gen version.
Danny Staples, as we call him.
But everything else that I'm seeing, all the other reviews seem, it seems to be getting just as high scores as last year.
GTA Online is still kind of broken.
Mm.
Unbelievably,
a year
later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the single player stuff is obviously bigger and better than ever. Mm. Computer.
Well, they have actually added quite a bit of new stuff.
Damon.
Yeah, I know. Like over 100 new songs.
Yeah.
So I got to check it out, because the soundtracks to GTA games are always so good.
That's the thing that blows me away about this one, is like they didn't need to add any new songs, let alone over 100. Why is there 130 new songs? Like, it's almost too much.
No, I think it's awesome.
It's not too much. This footage.
Well, this is footage of, they added a peyote. There's like different areas of the game where you can take peyote and then go on.
You go on
spirit
these. You go on these spirit quests, but the big thing about the peyote is each one that you eat turns you into a different animal, and each animal has their own like special move. Like you can fly around as a bird and poop on people.
Yep,
it's
It's what I want to do if I ever turn into a bird.
And then I didn't see the context, I just saw an animated GIF of someone running around as a cat, and then a police officer ran up and beat the cat to death.
How awesome is it that you can see like the downtown skyline way off in the distance there? I'm actually not the biggest fan of this game, but I'm still I can still be very impressed by it, its scope and grandeur. But this is footage of Marty taking peyote is what we're
Marty?
At. Yeah.
I like Franklin's beard.
Yeah, he looks good. This is a good looking Franklin. I mean, for me, when it first got announced, or we all knew it was coming,
yeah.
I was like, whatever, no big deal. Then when I saw the first person stuff, I was like, really want to play the game a little bit at least
they
like that.
They didn't half-ass it.
No, and then even stuff like this, the fact that there's like goofy stuff like this in there makes me think I'll fall back down maybe over Christmas break, into it and actually play more of it, but like, I mean, for me, the killer is just the fact that I can't bring over my single player save.
I know, I feel the exact same
way. If I could have brought my save over, then awesome. Then I would totally be there taking peyote right now, shooting things from first person mode, having a great time.
Yeah, Justin, you talked about how you wish games would give you the keys to the city more often.
Yeah,
right?
Like once
and just let you run around.
Once you've beaten a game, or even Rockstar actually has something similar to what I was describing with Dragon Age, where you can go to their website and it tracks in minute detail every little thing you ever did. Like you've completed these 13 of 100 side quests. Here's all your scores in the single player mission.
Yeah.
So if they're tracking all that, it feels like you should have been able to import that into the next gen version instead of just your online character. Because I started going down the path in GTA of 100%ing it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm doing it. Poor chicken. But then I eventually got sidetracked, and I would pick this up and probably go back and 100% the game.
Yeah, 100%,
I'm not going through that like 40-hour story.
And that's the thing is that I enjoyed GTA 5. I had a great time with it. I loved the story when I was going through it, but like I just know who I am. I just don't like replaying stories, and to go back and replay something that took that long, right, and do all those little things. It's like,
And the story is really, really good, but it does have its highs and lows.
I'd like
to do sort of some of the awesome missions again, but like I don't want to ride around with like Jimmy again, and that stuff serves an important narrative purpose. But like that's one time is enough.
Sure.
Well, the first person view is the other. Huge addition to the game, which we have some footage of here. It's enabling all sorts of different.
And that was the thing, right?
Close-ups that you didn't get to see before.
There's this, and then there's so much footage online of people running around in first-person mode, mowing people down in the streets.
Yes.
And it's
pretty disturbing.
Exactly. It's a really interesting.
Not this, the mowing people down.
Well, even like this and the sex that you can have in this game in first-person mode, all is very it makes you feel different than when I was in third person running around shooting things and being stupid. When we were doing our subway puncher thing, right?
Yeah, for
sure. We ran around punching people to death in the subway. It was funny.
When I first heard about this, though, I have to say, it's not quite as scandalous as people are making it sound.
No,
they still have all their clothes on. You're just like seeing them. They're basically just like dry humping and grinding.
Well, it's like robotic and weird and gross.
Yeah.
And like that might kind of be a commentary of what it's like to pick up a prostitute in downtown LA. But
I've never had
that
experience.
It's crazy to think that this animation was like all happening in the car when we were in third person view, and like you never see any of it.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of little stuff like if you get a phone call when you're driving, your character
computer,
that's enough. I do think there's a difference. Kez McDonald used to work for IGN, now she works for Kotaku in the UK, and she wrote a really good thing about the first person sex in GTA, and she's like,
thought it was just sad.
Yeah, she's like, this is sad and weird and not titillating at all.
Yeah.
And like, why? But so I do separate that in the violence.
Sure.
Like to me, the violence is like more realistic than ever.
Yeah.
Tell me, why does the violence give you pause? Because like there's plenty of games where you could run around first person mowing people down.
I know, and I get that, and I guess it's so weird to try to vocalize what the difference is. And
they're not your enemies in this game.
Exactly.
They're not your enemies in this.
I mean,
they're just like. Like bystanders?
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of remember the outrage over the Call of Duty airport level, right? Yeah. And that's what this is. This is you're walking down the street in first person mode and everybody's just chilling, going about their LA business. Yeah. And then, you're going to start mowing people down.
There's a dude holding a latte and talking
on the phone, and they're screaming. And it's like, I guess it would have just been the step back before in third person of. Mm-hmm. I know what kind of character Michael is. I know who he is. Trevor is obviously goofy and crazy. Like, there's all, I've made my Franklin have this giant fro, and he's like he just got high. And it's like, for that little bit of context makes it different. And then when you're in first person, and it is you at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is it role playing anymore? Yeah. And I'm not like saying it should be banned or anything like that, but it was watching it, you're like, you're walking up with a hatchet and like hatching
people. Exactly,
like,
hatchet, geez. And there's new melee weapons that feel like they're specifically designed to like I, for one of the first times in my life, I had to like look away where we had a, it was an IGN video, the guy had a hammer.
Yeah.
And he was sprinting around with a hammer, like getting ready to hammer people. And I'm like, nah, I don't, I had to, I was
yeah,
like.
Yeah, it was a weird, I didn't expect that. Like when they said it in first person, I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. And the driving will be nice. And then you look at it like, yeah, for like GTA missions, when you're against an enemy and they're trying to kill you, different story than just like walking around being the subway puncher.
That's to me, that's the big difference, is whether they're an adversary or whether they're just someone in the world. Like if they're, if you're in a gang and then it's a rival gang member, it's like, all right, man, get fucked. Like, you know,
but, this gotta go. Yeah. I'm not going in the ground. You are.
Yeah. But when it, yeah, when it's a dude, just an LA dude with his dumb glasses and his coffee and you're just knocking him out, it's like, I don't care for that.
Yeah.
I mean, again, like Greg, I don't think it should be banned or anything, but just me personally, I found it.
It caught me off guard that I was like, huh, it's weird that I'm just, that makes me feel different than it did when it was in
makes
third.
Makes you feel something.
Yeah, it's been so long.
Maybe just getting older.
No, I don't like that answer. I don't like that when people are like, whoa, computer,
good shot.
Bring back Damon's desktop.
Sands through the hourglass.
Do you see that PS4 Black Friday bundle is a really good deal.
I didn't see it.
Comes with GTA 5 and Last of Us Remastered.
How much is it?
For $400.
Oh, nice. That is a good one.
Just bundle with two free games for your PS4. And then did you hear about the Walmart?
Yeah, $90.
Yeah.
They changed their policy, too, as a result.
Yeah, they had to update the policy. Well, I mean, it makes sense. If anyone didn't catch this story, some people tricked Walmart into selling them $90 PlayStation 4s by creating fake Amazon listings, which is apparently easy to do if you have an Amazon seller's account, to create an authentic-looking Amazon listing for a $90 PS4. All they do is show it to the cashier at Walmart, and they're, you know, they don't know any better.
I get
it. Sure.
Well, even if you did know better, like, let me bring it up on my phone. Yeah. Oh, that's what they're selling it for.
And then, so we got a statement from Walmart today, and so they had to update their policy so that third party, they will accept stuff from Amazon, like only that's sold by Amazon, not sold by third parties through Amazon. So I thought that was interesting.
I guess I just buy everything online anyway. Yeah. I don't even really consider like price matching policies these days.
It's so weird when I go back to Missouri or whatever and I go into like a Target or something. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
I haven't been in a place like this in ages.
Well, I go to Target all the time.
I don't.
I thought you use Google Shopping for everything now.
Yeah, I do.
Is that what it's called? Or
Google Express.
Google Express.
That's the best if you're in a city that supports it. You got that Google Express?
I just order like Amazon. No, I mean, I used to have Safeway deliver my groceries.
Google Express, like same day delivery for anything.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Costco, so good.
Let's move on. This week we're celebrating 2 10th anniversaries. The first one happened on Sunday, the 16th. That was the 10th anniversary of Half-Life 2.
Greg's favorite game.
Yeah, damn it, big fan of Half-Life 2.
Did I steal your joke?
Actually, have IGN's video review of Half-Life 2 from.
Oh, look at that old watermark. Yeah. I'm sure it's gonna be old everything.
Yeah. 2004.
Who reviewed it?
Roper.
I would have to. I'd have to listen to it.
Possibly Steve Butts.
It's been 10 years since Half-Life 2 came out.
It's a long time, man. Incredibly influential game. Its influence is still being felt in single. I mean, it changed shooter campaigns, you know, video game shooters campaigns forever.
I mean, some people believe, myself included, that there still has not been a better single player first person shooter released to this day.
I mean, it depends on, like, I certainly find the gameplay in something like Halo to be stronger, but like in terms of narrative and, you know, world design and things of that nature, sure, I would give it to Half-Life.
But now, 10 years later, we still don't have Half-Life 3.
How do you follow up? Oh, Dan Adams. Damn, we should have known that. That's an easy one.
It's been 7 years since Half-Life 2, Episode 2, was released.
Yeah, I thought it was 6 years. 6 or 7 years, sure.
Episode 1 came in 2006.
Oh, wow. Okay.
2 in 2007. And then that was it. That was just the last we ever heard of the Half-Life franchise.
Mitch Dyer actually just wrote a thing for IGN yesterday about this topic. Valve is a super different company now, right? Like Steam.
So Steam launched with Half-Life 2.
Yeah. So Steam makes them billions of dollars now. So they really don't even need to make games at all.
Yeah.
And the games that they do make are stuff like, you know, if you look at what they have in common, Counter-Strike Go, Team Fortress 2, and Dota 2, all online. You know, all not specifically free to play in the case of Counter-Strike, I don't believe. But they're just different, right? They're not making these single player narrative driven games anymore. Very expensive to make, very hard to make, not a lot of payoff.
But they started something. It's just like if after Empire Strikes Back, George Lucas was like, well,
done.
That's probably it. Probably just don't ever need to wrap this story up.
Yeah, it sucks. I want to see them finish it. I almost feel like, man, like Valve's in a tight spot because they're so good. Portal 2 was one of my favorite games I've ever played, yeah, ever. So I certainly believe that they can deliver,
yeah,
Half-Life 3, but like the more time that goes by, the harder it gets for them. Like, what if they deliver a great game? It's still going to be like just people's heads and their heads are expectations, yeah, for right. it. They want it so bad. Like,
yeah,
it's like the Star Wars prequels. Like, it almost doesn't matter how good they are. Like,
yeah, well,
with every year that goes by, people are just going to be, I feel like, more and more disappointed with whatever the finished product
is. The expectation
ends up being.
Goes higher and higher and higher. Yeah. Especially as you bring in new people who hear so, you guys lie all the time about how great this game is. And then they're like, well, gosh, when 3 comes around, I got to play it. And they'll play it. And they'll be like, this is like Duke Nukem forever.
Well, I also don't like, we make the mistake of, so I don't like it when people attribute things to just IGN as if it's a singular thing. And
yeah.
I'm like, nah, there's yeah. been dozens of people that have worked here and have done different creative works. And like Valve's the same way, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that company has the same staff turnover that like maybe some other places do. I think people love working there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people that made some of their big single player experiences are not at that company
sure.
anymore. And so it's like, how many people work at Valve that weren't even there when Half-Life 2 was made?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't envy the pressure that they must feel to
sure.
deliver.
I mean, the reality is we may never play Half-Life 3.
2 was so good, except for climbing up and down ladders. That came as a 10 out of 10.
That was the rough spot. We're now joined by Brian Altano.
Oh, man, what's up?
Thanks for joining us. You're just in time to talk.
Oh, man, what's up?
I just appeared here. Hello.
You're just in time to talk about the Nintendo DS, which was released 10 years ago. Actually, today, the day that this episode is released.
Oh,
10 wow. years.
Look at how ugly that thing was. Yeah. What a hideous beast.
Oh, the original. When I picture the DS, I don't picture
it. I picture the light.
The cute and sexy little DS.
When you say, I'm the same way, when you say the Nintendo DS, I picture the very thin, streamlined DS Lite or yeah. the DSi. I picture like this whitewashed room and Beyonce's playing Nintendogs on it. Everything's clean and organized. This thing was
monster.
Not any of those
it's
things.
A monster.
It was.
Also, almost impossible to play in any sort of sunlight.
Yeah.
Very hard
yeah.
to see.
Do you remember, were any of you at the E3 where the original DS was unveiled and playable for the first time?
So that would have been E3 2004, the year
no.
it was released?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, probably. Well, anyway, so the point is they hadn't quite figured out what to do with that touchscreen yet, and like all their demos were terrible. And obviously the DS was an incredible console, but there was a Sonic the Hedgehog demo where all you did was slide.
I do remember that demo. I remember watching videos for that on IGN. It was basically you just spun. And you did the thing where you rev up Sonic, but you did it with a touchscreen.
The faster you slid the stylus, like the faster Sonic would go, and people are like...
And I remember most of the journalists that came back from E3 just talked about how destroyed those screens were by the
yeah.
end of the,
yep.
the end of the first 3 days, because tens of thousands of people came in there and they're just stroking Sonic and then
and
just
you had
stroking Sonic.
You had Super Mario 64 DS that you could either play with the thumb nub
yeah,
on the
thumb strap.
Yeah, the thumb
which
strap.
Shipped with every one of those and then was quietly
thing.
Killed.
So it's like obviously it's so funny that the DS is maybe one of my favorite consoles ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Incredible game library, but it just shows that even Nintendo, man, like they don't exactly know what they're doing when they like launch a new console.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean I feel like it always takes them a little while to get around to getting it together when it comes to handhelds. I think it almost always does.
Yeah.
In fact, every first iteration of each of their handhelds is a borderline painful, broken. There's always something completely wrong about it. You look at the original Game Boy. It launched. It was a gigantic brick with puke green. They made it slim and with the pocket. They made it black and white. Eventually, they made it color. The DS or the Game Boy Advance was completely dark. You couldn't see anything on it.
Yeah.
They made it smaller. They made it clamshell.
God, the clamshell was so good.
It was so much better.
Yep, yep.
This thing was a clunky mess. It felt, I think we used to call it it was like a layer cake because it was just basically all different sizes. It was heavy. It was very uncomfortable. The stylus was in a weird place. Battery life was bad. And they improved all of that. Even like the online integration. Even the original 3DS, if you look at that compared to
the DS was not a hit for like a year.
Oh, yeah? No.
It was Nintendogs and Brain Age.
Yeah,
that wasn't until like that summer of whatever the next.
Yeah.
The PSP often outsold
New Super Mario Brothers was one of the ones for core gamers
That was when I fell in love with my light.
Because there was a while there where the MPD charts, it was always on. It was just one of those games that just had legs.
It did sell well right at first. Yeah. So it was out November 21st, 2004. Just in time for Black Friday sales. It sold 1 million units in like the first month.
I was one of them.
Well, it's one of those things where it's hard to remember that context now, but there'd not been a 2D Mario in a decade at that time. Like 2D Mario was
original,
gone.
An original 2D Mario, yeah, we hadn't had one in since
and so that was a,
Super Mario World,
that was
really
a big, big deal. And of course, it's led to this. It's not a big deal now. Now we get a 2D Mario all the time. We're spoiled for, you know, awesome 2D and 3D Mario games. But yeah, that was a massive deal back then.
Part of the reason it probably took a while to really catch on because the launch lineup was just... its launch lineup is pretty dismal. Yeah. Here it is.
Rub Rabbits.
You have something to say?
I remember the launch
lineup. King Pals.
Asphalt Urban GT from Gameloft.
Yep.
Feel the Magic, and I've got a couple photos here.
Yeah, I owned Feel the Magic.
Madden NFL 2005, Ping Pals, Ridge Racer DS, Spider-Man 2, Sprung, Metroid Prime Hunters. Only vaguely remember that one.
The demo.
Super Mario, yeah, it came with a demo of that. Super Mario 64 DS, The Herbs, Sims in the City, and Tiger Woods PGA Tour. And some of these games were pretty like...
Can I admit something on the show right now?
Yes.
I owned I bought about half, if not 70% of those launch games.
Yeah,
that weren't like, except for the EA ones and the pure bottom of the barrel junk like Ping Pals, which... Yeah. Was basically PictoChat with emoticons and Sprung, which was a dating sim.
Well, yeah, so like Feel the Magic was called Project Rub in the UK, which we've got the box art here.
Buy that.
It's just pretty, racy for Nintendo.
Feel the Magic was a totally good game. That's like an underrated DS launch game.
It is, yeah. It's a slower paced, even more Japanese WarioWare.
Yeah, it's like little touch mini games like WarioWare. It was better than WarioWare Touched.
That's for sure.
Yeah,
100%.
At the time the DS came out, I worked for a website focused specifically on handheld gaming. So I actually know a tremendous amount about...
This is the Sprung box art, a game where everyone scores.
Oh, yeah!
It's just really odd that they launched this new...
A game where only white people score.
Yes.
I like that. Hooked up, it says right there.
Yeah, he has brass knuckles to say hooked up.
Look at this guy. He's like, don't leave the hot tub. We were just getting started.
This is like a dating sim?
Why does he talk
like that?
Who's this guy? Is he... Oh, he's puppeteering this,
yeah.
this
yeah,
couple.
Yeah, he's the puppet master on the couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's you.
It was like a dating game.
I like the girl that's dressed as a pimp.
Hooked up.
There we go.
That was Ubisoft too. That was Ubisoft in the mid 2000s. Like, can you imagine that company doing something like that now?
There'd
be a lot of Uplay integration.
The problem with the Nintendo DS is that it really never really caught its footing of what it wanted to be, whether it was a 2D platform or a 3D platform. So that's why you had games like Spider-Man at launch that were that fake 2.5D, right? And then you had Super Mario 64, which was 3D but didn't have an analog stick. So you had to use your touchscreen or a stylus or the D-pad, which barely worked.
You know, I was just thinking about Super Mario 64 DS the other day. That game had 30 more stars in it.
Yeah.
That's like what people kind of tend to forget or don't think about that much. Super Mario 64, one of the greatest games of all time. My third favorite game ever made. And like there's a version of it that's got more content that I don't think I ever saw on those stars.
I saw it.
I didn't even play that. Like
I didn't want to
play with a D-pad.
I got all 120 stars in Super Mario 64. I do it every few years. And yet there's this version of it that's kind of locked away behind this like terrible control scheme.
So not only does it have more stars, it actually has more stages.
More playable characters.
More playable characters that you switch to with hats. I mean, in the original game, you got Yoshi if you jumped on top of the roof at the very end of the 120 stars.
Well, it was an Easter egg.
It was an Easter egg.
Really, like,
yeah, you couldn't even
really
do
anything. He was just like, hey, Mario. Yeah.
He was just like, here's
Yoshi.
Infinite lives. And everyone wanted to play as Luigi, but in this one you finally could. And yeah, it's all that cool content in the Super Mario 64 hub world, which is one of the greatest games of all time, is buried on that system.
It's like
with a D-pad. It's a crime.
That's why I was thinking about this, is because we were going to write a feature of the definitive version of games that's like locked away, that either have some fatal flaw, like the controls in this instance. Like, it's crazy. Like, what if they release Super Mario 64 DS but on like the Wii U Virtual Console or something, like some way that you can actually play it with proper 3D controls. Like,
yeah.
I would love to go back and see what those stars were about.
Me too.
Sure. DS was notable for being the first Nintendo hardware launched in North America before Japan. Okay, it was released here first.
Interesting.
Anyway.
I remember...
A fun fact there.
Thanks, Damie.
I remember specifically I played the Metroid Prime Hunters demo in a Best Buy, and yeah. I was like, this is weird, but I still have to buy this because it says Nintendo on it.
I waited until until Advance Wars came out,
and then that's excellent game.
Wow, yeah.
Excellent game.
That's when I got it.
The DS one was, in my opinion, a little bit lesser, but still great.
Also this week, the creators of Maniac Mansion have unveiled a new game, the spiritual successor to Maniac Mansion. Gilbert. Yeah. Ron Gilbert and what's the other guy's name? Ron Gilbert's friend.
Don Gilbert.
Yeah, sorry, buddy.
It's called Thimbleweed Park, and it's an old school classic point-and-click adventure game with made to look just like Maniac Mansion did. The idea is that this is supposed to be an old LucasArts game that someone just found in a desk somewhere that was never published and is now being brought out.
Same pixel art style, same point-and-click adventure, sort of. They're trying to raise money on Kickstarter. The last I checked, I was actually super surprised. I mean, I think this looks rad, but they're trying to raise $375,000, and I was like, oh, man, I don't know if people are going
to
go for it.
To make this, but what do I know?
Here's the deal. Like, I understand enough about game development. Like, I get it, right? Like,
Gary Winnick.
There he goes. That's why it's super expensive to make games. So I don't doubt that they need that much money, but I was just skeptical. I was worried that people wouldn't be willing to pitch it in.
So where do you know where it's at?
I don't know exactly where they're at, but the last I looked, it looked like they were on a good pace.
Mm-hmm. They'll make it.
Yeah.
And really, honestly, like we hinted at it, but that's not a lot of money to make a video game.
No, it's not at all. But like, I just saw, like, you know how the internet is today.
Sure.
Look at the art of it. You can make this, you can bang this out in an afternoon.
You can make this on my phone. I can make this on my brother's phone.
Yeah, exactly. exactly. And I was also...
The art's really cool. I'm surprised they went with this original style. Like, this is pretty awesome.
I love the art. And regardless of, what you think about the quality of the art, one thing that you cannot replicate is the sense of humor and the wit of these guys. Hilarious.
Mm-hmm. It is. Even the trailer is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's even muted right now.
But even their Kickstarter page is hilarious.
On one of the early episodes of Up at Noon, Ron Gilbert was here, and he talked about something very fascinating that has nothing to do with video games. He said that him and his wife watch their favorite shows on Netflix the way TV would program them for them. So they're like, we're watching Lost and Breaking Bad and Sons of Anarchy. So Monday nights, we're going to watch an episode of Lost, an episode of Breaking Bad, and an episode of Sons of Anarchy. And Tuesday, we're going to watch House and blah, blah, blah. So they never would sit there and like marathon through like 15 episodes in a row. It was like one episode a week. He had a TV schedule on his fridge that he made himself.
That sounds insane.
Yeah.
But then if you think about it for a second, it's actually kind of brilliant. Because it's basically like the way that other people watch TV, but they just get the best of everything.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine if every television show was one of the greatest shows ever made and you just got to watch them back.
I would love to like read a book on just quirks on game developers like that, because that's such a game developer thing to say.
Are you caught up with Sons of Anarchy?
Yes.
I thought the last couple episodes are some of the best of the entire show.
They're turning them.
It's finally like things are happening. And
they're
like,
turning the show around again.
The last couple episodes.
Well, they only have
really
what? There's 2 hours left to finish it all.
December 9th is the last episode. So yeah.
Unless they pull a Dexter and it ends with a zoom in on one of the characters and he's like, I'm in a Canadian logging community now.
Yeah, he's in a Canadian biker gang.
Oh my God.
Anyway, I will totally play Thimbleweed Park.
Maple syrup.
I'll totally play Thimbleweed Park come June 2016.
Yeah, you were saying that. You were already saying that seems so far away.
Yeah, a year and a half.
But like, here's the deal. We're only a few months away from 2015.
Still a year and a half away.
Yeah.
Well, so here's the weird problem with crowdsourcing is that you learn about things way earlier than you do games.
Because they have
to. Yeah. So like if Ubisoft's like, we're working on, Child of Light 2. Like, I won't know about that game until like 3 months before it's out, right? Yeah. It'll be at E3, they'll show us a trailer, and it'll be like out this fall. But with Kickstarter or crowdfunding stuff, like, they need your money now so they can make it in a year and a half. So you end up knowing about this for the longest time. And I don't know if that helps or hurts.
Yeah, well, it's like Far Cry 5 is coming in 3 years. And it's like, that seems impossible.
You heard it here first.
But you won't know about it for another 2 years, so don't worry about it.
Yep.
I love that a game like this can exist and coexist alongside huge AAA.
Dragon Age, Far Cry 4,
It's fantastic.
Yeah, we live in an awesome era. So that can happen.
There's an ongoing debate as to how good a year this was for video games.
But yeah.
That's another topic.
We'll save that for a future scoop.
Yeah. Are you guys at all surprised to hear that Americans now spend more time on their smartphones than they do watching TV. No. It is official. It did just officially happen over the last 9 months.
That's scary. It's very scary. I read an article recently about how people going to college for the first time, like if you have a TV in your dorm, people are like, what's wrong with you? What a waste of space. Why don't you just watch shows on your laptop? Like people have little MacBooks and that's all they need. It's really it.
I have Netflix on my television and I choose to watch it on my laptop.
It's how come?
I don't know. I just lay on the couch and then it's just my routine. Then it sits on the coffee table and that's just what I do.
You know what? You can watch TV while laying on the couch too.
I don't know. It feels more, I like the closeness of it.
It makes sense because your phone is with you all day long, right?
Yeah.
And you have to leave you have to say goodbye to your TV when you come to work in the morning. But Americans still watch.
Your stomach's making the crazy.
I'm growling. My stomach's growling. I had a light lunch. Mine does, my body's like, what are you doing?
Mine does the same thing. But I did not have a light lunch. I had an enormous burrito and I ate all of it.
Nice work.
What was I going to say? You still watch, Americans watch an average of 2 hours, 48 minutes of TV a day.
Still?
Seems like a lot.
That's how much
TV
they watch. And that's remained constant for years. But now Americans spend an average of 2 hours, 57 minutes looking at their smartphones every day.
So wait. The amount of TV hasn't dropped, but the amount of phone watching has climbed?
Yeah.
Well, like, what's being replaced?
Interacting with human beings.
Hugging is being replaced.
Yeah,
talking
sucks.
To people face to face, having a normal conversation with somebody.
Having dinner with your family.
This, what we're doing right here, which is why I love doing stuff like this, because this is like, I'm not on my phone, I'm not watching
but there's
TV.
There's a camera watching us, we're being paid.
Other people are watching this, that's the problem. Yeah. We're getting away with
other people are watching this on their smartphones, please, quite possibly.
Turn us off and go call your dad.
You're right.
Wait until the show's over, then.
Wait until the show's over.
We're contributing to the problem, we're creating content that people are watching on their phones right now.
If you're watching this on your phone.
So my theory is that the TV people, people that watch TV for 2.5 hours a day or whatever it is, I don't think that's like actively being like, I think a lot of people come home and they turn on the TV and it just sort of exists until they go to bed. It's just a voice in the apartment. And now they do that plus stare at the phone. So they're happening a lot. There's
a lot of overlap. Yeah, there is a lot of overlap.
That's what I'm saying.
I've also read that 11% of people sleep with the TV on. They just have it like on to help them.
That's crazy. That would drive me nuts.
Some people just need that noise.
But I don't know about you guys, but like when I sit down to watch a movie now or a TV show, it's like I don't just sit down to watch a movie or TV show. I sit down and I go, okay, I have my phone or I have my 3DS.
That's the worst.
I
multitask.
I have to focus. You and I would not be able to be movie buds.
You could watch it. I mean, if I miss something, I'll just ask you what happened.
Oh my God.
Your worst nightmare.
No, I don't even like.
I multitask, man. You know what? Dual screen monitors is what ruined that for me. Like once I started being like, oh, I have work over here, I can read the internet over here, and like marathon through The Shield over here. Like I totally did that. Like marathoning through shows to me is something that is very sort of passive.
There's a difference between like watching 2009 Star Trek for the 10th time and also being like on your phone a little bit and like watching, you know, whatever, Boardwalk Empire for the first time.
Well, sure. I mean, and like there are, exceptions. Like Breaking Bad is a show I could not look away from, right? And I don't bring my phone into the movie theater and sit there and like, oh, what'd they say? What'd you say, Interstellar? Like, no, I don't do that. But there's just a lot of mindless TV out there. And
I think
that people are sort of finding a way to...
Cake.
You're not like, oh man, what kind of flower was that?
Did you hear he got arrested?
Yeah.
What I think is really significant is the television achieved mass adoption in the 50s, and ever since then, it's basically been the focus of the American home. So 65 years, is the focus of the American home.
Yeah, you said the 50s, and I said, oh, 50 years ago. That's and I'm like, nope, it is almost 2015.
65 years, but... The iPhone was just introduced in 2007.
Yeah.
So in 7 years, now people spend more time on their phones than on their TV.
I think the scariest thing about that stat, too, is that for a very long time, people chastised the television as something that was a distraction. But I do think that there was something endearing about the way it did sort of tear families apart, but it does bring people together.
Like people sit there and stare at it like zombies together.
I don't know if you remember... when like Lost was on and people would like regularly have like episode watching parties.
Sure, sure.
I don't know if that really happens anymore. Like I think people are very secluded with their TV watching habits now.
Yeah.
And whereas a TV used to bring a bunch of people into the living room around one center hub, people now are consuming videos and shows and stuff like that on their own on their phone. So now you have six people in a household staring at their own devices instead of six people staring at one together.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference between, that's sort of what's going on in the media business right now, is the newspaper used to tell you what was important because they would put it on their front page, but now people pick and choose news from wherever they want. Like, I care about sports and video games and I'm a Republican. So that means I read IGN and I read ESPN, you know, and I watch Fox News. And so now you get to decide what's important for yourself instead of, you know, some third party saying, no, look, you don't get to grab people and say, pay attention to this anymore. And that's a total, I was going to say total problem. I don't know whether it is or not, but it is a big shift, a big change.
Yeah, I think it's a shift because discovery happens in a totally different way now. Yeah. It's not just sort of like pushing a button and then seeing something and being like, this is what I have to watch tonight.
Yeah.
Like that was the olden days of TV. You hit the big click thing. Literally, it made a clicking noise. And then whatever was on was what you're like, oh, tonight we're watching boxing, honey. Yeah. And she was like, I'm not into that. You're like, well, there's no other channels. So.
Those three channels had the power to like shape the country's values, you know, and shape the conversation in a way that no one has that like centralized power anymore.
True. Do you guys know what the first smartphone was? What is considered to be the first
smartphone? The Nokia N-Gage.
No.
I had one of the really, really old Blackberries.
No, because this we can go back farther to that.
The Tiger
back
Game
to
Com.
1992. You
gotta go back farther.
I got a photo of the IBM Simon.
Oh my goodness.
Which I can pull up here. Here we go. Yeah. The IBM Simon personal computer introduced in 1992, released in 1994.
Was this portable?
It was, so it's a phone.
Where's that wire going, Damon? I don't believe you.
That's like the charging
base.
That's
the base.
What? Yeah, you can take out the phone off there. It's a cellular phone, $900 with a 2-year contract, $1,100 on its own. You could send and receive faxes, emails, and pages. It had an address book, a calendar, an appointment book, a calculator, a world time clock, an electronic notepad, and a predictive keyboard.
That's pretty badass.
In 1992.
It's weird because I feel like back then everything was named after dudes, and now it's all named after women.
No, now it's just made up words like Twitter and Google.
No, what I mean, like Siri or Amazon's new thing where it's just like you talk to this woman.
Yeah, speaker the Amazon Echo, Cortana.
Also, I say made up words as if every word that has ever existed hasn't just been made up.
Oh, in my mind. My dad had one of those old car phones that you like carry, like came in a pat, like I slung it over your shoulder and put it in the car.
Is this what Zach Morris had?
Probably.
He had a phone like that.
Even though that was introduced in 1992, the term smartphone would not be coined until 1997.
Phones were stupid until 1997.
Yep.
The interesting thing about that phone is, I mean, obviously that's super clunky, right? But I connect that to things like the Oculus Rift today. So it's like, you need to take some mental leaps to see like the potential of where something will be in another decade. Like that's why I'm kind of inclined to give things.
Or the first DS.
Well, yeah. Real quick before we go this week, just a couple more things. I have an iPad game recommendation. Mm-hmm. Kingdom Rush Origins is out now. This is the third in the Kingdom Rush series, which is probably the best tower defense series on iPad.
We did. Kingdom Rush Frontier is the second sequel. The first sequel, Frontiers, is on our list of the top 25 iPhone games of all time. Very, very good. I haven't played the new one yet.
Yeah, so this is the new one, Origins. We'll see some gameplay footage here. But basically, if you like tower defense games at all, I cannot recommend it highly enough.
This one's the business.
They're just super polished. This is what the gameplay actually looks like. So they're super polished.
Wow.
It's got a lot of personality. Every single unit type has a voice recorded in the game.
Yeah.
It's just super fun.
I totally want to play
it. I really like the art style.
They're also really, they're not afraid to be like really challenging. Like
they are really hard.
Totally get hard.
So. Look at that eagle.
Only slightly new game mechanics.
Yeah.
If there is a criticism, it's that it's just more of the same.
You and I were talking about this. The Kingdom Rush games don't really change from game to game. You get like a couple new tower upgrades and new maps and stuff, and that's kind of it. But I feel like maybe they can get away with it. This is the last time they can get away with it. It's like, all right, Ironhide games.
Yeah, probably.
You've made the same game, the same incredible game, but you've made it kind of three times now, so it's time for you to mix it up.
I've already played a bunch of it. I like it a lot. It's really fun. And then before we go, I wanted to show you guys this ad for an old game that I found here. This is for Fox Sports Golf 99 on Tumblr, man. I follow some Tumblr blogs. This is for Fox Sports Golf 99.
I remember this.
Easier on your home than the real thing. I like that
he's sliced into his cat's litter box, apparently while his cat was still in there. That's animal cruelty.
So he... Wow, so I don't know if he's amazing at golf in his home or he's the worst, because he found the only sand in the entire apartment.
And he put a golf ball in it, and then he hit it while his cat was in there.
Should you, should you wait 30 seconds for your cat to get
done? No,
I like four. They didn't even get the, a cat that's like, oh God, he's like a minorly annoyed cat. He's like,
cat's like, it's
that's
fine.
A pain in the ass.
It's happened seven.
Why is there a book on the floor, the phone? What a disaster this guy is.
And then it does the video, the old video game ad thing of three little pictures the size of postage stamps at the bottom.
Yep.
That's how they all were.
Sports games, Fox attitude.
What is that?
I don't remember.
This was 99. It's amazing how quickly 1999 also looked like 1989.
Yeah.
Like, all of that just looks bad now. 99 was supposed to be, like, the most futuristic year ever.
There's a website there for foxsportsgames.com. I don't even remember that being, like, a
brand.
Thing. Like, they were competing with EA Sports. And
this is, like,
2K.
PS1 era, I guess?
Yeah.
Wow.
Also available for Windows 95 CD-ROM.
That guy has poop all over his house now.
Yeah. It's gross.
Probably did already. Yeah. Sick man.
Spoilers, he's not a real guy.
Yeah. Also,
that's not a real house.
That guy's probably dead by now. The cat definitely is.
Yeah, the cat's 100%.
It's like the cat died that day when he hit him with his golf club.
I shouldn't laugh at that, but it's really funny.
Terrible. We've had fun today. It's been good. I don't know if we're going to record an episode next week. So in case we don't, what's something about video games that we're thankful for? Next week being Thanksgiving. That's where that comes from.
It's a big question, Damon.
Yeah.
Spring on us. Yeah, do you have an answer?
I was going to think about while you guys gave your answers.
I think Justin kind of touched on it. I'm thankful that we live in this era where we can get weird sequels to Maniac Mansion and brand new Call of Duty games.
Yeah, that's really good.
Around the same time. Wow, I mean, years apart. Spoilers, there'll be a Call of Duty game in 2 years. But I think it's really cool that we didn't it wasn't this sort of just like race to the roof.
Yeah.
Like, we took some stops along the way and some detours, and that's really cool to be able to see that there's still old school Nintendo games coming out. There's still the most futuristic, third person action game and first person shooters ever made. There's online multiplayer games and there's weird, quirky, funny point and click adventure games from guys that make pixel art. That's awesome.
I feel the same way. Video games have never been more broad. You know, I'm playing games like Clicker Heroes in my browser. I'm playing puzzle games on my phone. I'm playing Dragon Age Inquisition, which is one of the biggest budget experiences I've ever experienced. Online shooters, everything big, small, and in between. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's something for everyone.
I'm thankful that I get to do what I love for a living. I get to hang out with my friends and talk about video games and movies and TV all day. And I just have a really good time every day. And I'm thankful for that. Thank you. I have to thank you guys because you're the ones that make it all possible. So thank you for...
We told them to turn the show off, so none of them are here.
We didn't tell them to turn the show. Well, yeah, because now they're all talking to their dads.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Anyway, if you are in the U.S., I hope you have a great holiday week next week. And if you're not in the U.S., I hope you have a great week anyway. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Greg. Thanks, Aransky, in the control room. Thank you, computer.
Thanks,
my name
computer.
Is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.